Coming up on Money Bites by Smart Money People.
Oh, that's pathetic.
But my pension is something that I've completely messed up.
Einstein said that something called compound interest was the eighth wonder of the world.
Would you swap your home for an actual nest if it had a wonderful interior design?
It's so hard when you're self-employed.
Hello, is this the number for the Jammy Dodgers?
Welcome to Money Bites by Smart Money People. Here are your hosts, Mike and Nate.
Hello and welcome to Money Bites by Smart Money People. Coming up on today's show, we're asking, when should you start pension planning?
So, what do we have to look forward to today? We'll have Helen Dean, CEO at Nest, in to discuss all things workplace pensions. And later, Mr. Money will be putting another customer service team to the test in this week's prank call.
Time to fire up the hot seat as Mike welcomes another guest in to grill the big cheese.
On this week's Grill the Big Cheese, we spoke to CEO of Nest, Helen Dean. We were thrilled to chat with Helen, and make sure to stay tuned until the end of the interview to hear another edition of the world's greatest fintech confectionery competition, Skittlemania.
This week on our Pension Spectacular, we're talking pensions with one of the most important people in the pensions universe, Helen Dean, the CEO of Nest Pensions. Helen, thank you for joining us. Can you tell us a bit more about Nest? What do you guys do?
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here. So what does Nest do? Well, Nest is a very straightforward online pension that's available to any employer that wants to use us. We're open to anybody. We were set up for auto-enrollment. Auto-enrollment is the law that came in 2012, which I'm sure lots of people know about because lots of people will have been affected by it, because it means that for most workers, your employer not only has to put you into a pension, but has to make a contribution to that pension as well. Now that contribution is at least 5%. It's got to a position where now millions of people are saving for their retirement who weren't saving before. 10 million more people are saving for retirement than were before auto-enrollment started. And Nest has grown massively. So in the 7 years since auto-enrollment started in 2012, we've grown from nothing to more than 8 million members and to nearly 9 billion in assets. So it's been phenomenal to see the growth of Nest. We are free for the employer to use, and we're very low charge for members. I think we're leaders in terms of responsible investment, good governance, and communicating really clearly with our members. I think they're the things that we really hold dear.
So you talked about auto-enrollment and the government, and a lot of people are concerned that we're just not saving enough for our retirement, hence the need to mandate something and bring in auto-enrollment. How much does, say, the average 30-year-old need to be saving for their retirement?
It depends how much you earn, and it depends what your needs and wants are in retirement. But there are some rules of thumb. So if you start with the auto-enrollment minimum, that's 8%, so 8% of your salary going in over a lifetime of saving is the minimum that the government mandated. Is that enough? Well, probably not. For most people, that's probably not enough, and most people probably want to think about saving a bit more. And that's because often when people are thinking about their retirement income, they think in terms of something called replacement rates. So how much of the income that I have in work do I want to have in retirement? And generally, people look at between about half and three quarters of their in-work income as their aim for retirement. So obviously, that means that the more that you're earning, proportionally, the more of your salary you need to save. So higher earners probably need to save a little bit more. But really, the thing about saving for retirement is to start early and to keep saving continuously. It's magical. Einstein said that something called compound interest was the eighth wonder of the world. In fact, I think he said it was the most amazing thing in the universe. And compound interest is interest upon interest upon interest upon interest. If you start saving early, You're not just getting interest on the money you save, you're getting interest on the money that you save, and that just keeps rolling forward. So start when you're young, benefit from the magic of compound interest, keep saving regularly, and you'll probably be in a good place when you retire.
Helen, that's the first time anyone's talked about Einstein on the Money Bites podcast and the magic of pensions. They're not two things that you tend to put together. And when you talk about Ness, you said zero members a few years ago to 8 million and close to 9 billion of assets at the moment. Do you struggle sometimes, though, because pensions as a subject, it seems so dull to many, even though it's fundamental. We're all living a bit longer, which is wonderful, but it's going to cost us a lot more to fund that retirement. So how do you get people enthused and excited about effectively locking away money when millions don't have £200 in savings that they can rely on in a rainy day? How do you get people to actually start thinking and doing those positive steps towards building some funds for their retirement?
I think the fascinating thing is how popular auto-enrolment has been. So it's really hard for people to decide to take out a pension. And before automatic enrolment started, the government did lots of trials and tests to see what can we do in terms of advice and information to get people to save. And actually, the truth is, people found it really hard. They found it really hard to make the decision where to save, how much to save. That sort of stuff was really difficult for people. But actually, the same people said, you know, I really want to save for retirement. I really know I should be doing something about this, and I'm worried about it. When we brought in auto-enrolment, we thought maybe around 60% of people would stay in. Actually, we're finding more than 90% of people are staying in. It's massively popular. Amongst younger savers, even more so. More like 95% of young people are staying in their pension. Because it goes with the grain. It's doing something that fundamentally people really want to do. They're just not quite sure how. The other thing about it is, remember, when you're auto-enrolled, you get, through the combination of the employer contribution and tax relief from the government, you get almost a one-for-one match. So if you opt out, you're almost foregoing your salary. There's a bit of your money that you could have that you're foregoing. And who wants to do that? You know, who wants to give up money? So you put in your 4%, and the government and your employer will put it in the equivalent. So you're kind of effectively doubling your money and benefiting from investments. So it's a bit of a no-brainer. So I think, do people find pensions fascinating and do they want to spend a lot of time comparing pension options and thinking about it? No. Do people care that they've got enough money to live on when they retire? Yes, they do. And automatic enrolment facilitates that for people. I think getting people really interested, though, will come later. As the automatic enrolment account balances start to grow, and we start to see people getting meaningful amounts of money in there, it's the equivalent of a year's salary, or I could buy a car with that, or, you know, it starts to feel like a significant amount of money. What evidence in other countries suggests is that at that stage people will start to get interested, and typically they'll get interested in where their money is invested. And particularly amongst the younger generation, what we're seeing is that people are interested in whether or not their money is invested responsibly, ethically, whether or not actually we are responsible shareholder on their behalf. And so I think as we see automatic enrolment develop and we see account balances grow, more and more people will get interested, more and more people will get quite demanding of their pensions, and they'll want to know, what are you doing with my money? How are you actually making it grow for me? And are you investing it in a really responsible way? And those are the things, I think, ultimately, that we'll really be able to engage people with.
And today, Nest offers a range of different funds that people can put their retirement pot into, such as the ethical fund and high-risk funds as well, if people want to kind of try and grow it as fast as possible. What's the uptake been on the ethical fund? And are you finding that there's a particular type of consumer that opts to put their retirement pot in that fund?
It's a small proportion of our members who use the ethical fund, but it is growing. I think it's about 23 million at the moment. I think it was about 8.5 million the year before. If you think about the size of Nest, that's quite a small proportion. But I think the important point to make is that our default fund, which is by far where the vast majority of people are, 98% and above of people are in the default fund. Our default funds are very responsible. So we take account of environmental issues, we take account of social issues, we take account of governance issues when we're investing. We've eradicated controversial weapons from our portfolio. We're in the process of eradicating tobacco from our portfolio. For those things that we do invest in, we engage with those companies, we look at their governance, we look at the gender diversity on their boards, we engage with them. We do that because we think to create the best long-term financial returns for our members, we need to be investing in companies that are going to be sustainable over the long term. And sustainable companies over the long term are environmentally friendly. They're doing things that are a social benefit, and they certainly have good governance. Mm. So those sorts of things really matter to us. So we try to invest in the best companies and influence those companies that we do invest in a positive way.
And you talked about using that influence in a positive way. And as your assets under management continues to grow, you'll have more influence to play with. How big do you think Nest will be in the next 5 years? Based on the current trajectory and people paying in and employees paying in their contributions, what's the plan? How big will Nest be in the pension space in 5 years' time?
It'll be very big. So at the moment, we're growing by about 400 million a month. So, you know, if you just extrapolate forward, you can see very quickly from here, Nest gets very, very large. And of course, yes, that means our influence will start to grow. But we also are very influential now because we work with other pension funds who are like-minded, and we get together and we create a lot of influence by getting together with the best funds in the industry and the best fund managers in the industry, and making sure that we are as influential as we can be. So I think for us, the trajectory is just more and more and more of this. The power of pensions to actually affect positive change in society, in my opinion, is enormous. It was always enormous, but with automatic enrolment and the democratisation of pensions, the fact that we're heading for a world where almost everybody in the UK will have a pension, the power of that, I think, is phenomenal. Terms of those pension arrangements really driving positive change into society, into the environment, and into the way companies are run.
Yes, because you effectively put a lot of that pension money into listed entities, whether that's here in the UK or abroad, depending on the fund type. So auto enrolment still failing you, but massive, and as you said, you know, Nest is growing a significant amount every month. But alongside auto-enrolment, we've had the rise of the gig economy and more of us going into freelance roles. So I read something that said about 50% of everyone of working age is expected to be freelance within a decade, which is still massively shocking to me. What's the answer for that emerging majority? How do they also get, you know, how did they get encouraged and incentivized from a pensions perspective?
That's such a great question, because it's the next problem, I think, that we as a society really have to think about. How do we help those people to save? So if you look at people who are self-employed and people who are working in the gig economy, the first thing I would say is, if you ask them, they will typically say that they really want to be in a pension. But actually, I think only about 17% of them are. So there's a big disconnect between people's desire to be saving for their retirement and the reality. And why is that? It's partly because there isn't the nudge into pensions that people who are in employment get. There isn't the equivalent of auto-enrolment. Now, any self-employed person can come to Nest. Nest is open to all self-employed people, but they do have to make their mind up to do it. So some of the behavioural barriers that were working against employed people before automatic enrolment start are there, working against self-employed people. So we at Nest are doing some work to really try and understand how we can influence that. We've just done some work to really understand the market. It's a very diverse market. There's lots of different sorts of self-employed people, lots of wide different demographics in there. So there's no one size fits all answer to this. But it is true that many people who are self-employed already have a pension, because many people who are self-employed have had periods of employment. Mm. And of course now, if you have a period of employment because of auto-enrollment, you're almost certainly going to have got at least one. It's also, I think, true that many self-employed people would like an easy way to save. So we are starting now to move away from just researching to do some on-the-ground trials and looking at things like the kinds of platforms that self-employed people use.
If you were made Minister for Work and Pensions in a new government, what would the one thing, you've got one day in the job, Helen, what would be the one thing that you would do?
I would love to make it easier for people to consolidate their pensions. At the moment, one of the issues that we've got with automatic enrolment is people are building up multiple small pots, and the risk of that is actually they lose track of them. And if we could make it easier for people to consolidate those and bring them together into a single consolidated pot that they can get their arms around and understand and really engage with, I think that would be quite transformational for people. So if I could wave a magic wand, that would be one of the things that I would do.
And this time of the year, people start to think about what the year ahead looks like. I'm sure Nest have a lot of plans in place for next year already. If you could gaze into that crystal ball a few months, do you have any big predictions for what's coming in the world of pensions in 2020?
Well, I mean, I think UK pension system has made massive strides in the last few years, and we're on the cusp of something quite wonderful, because I think we are becoming world leading in terms of the coverage of pensions that we've got. But the thing that we need to do is build on that. It's really important now to build on that success. We've talked about some of them. We need to increase the number of people who are able to save. We need to think about self-employed people, people in the gig economy, yes, but also lower earners who at the moment are excluded from auto-enrolment. So let's widen the coverage of pension saving even further. Let's think about the people who are saving and whether they're saving enough, and put in place some of those interventions that will help people to grow their savings even more to a level that will give them an even better income in retirement. Let's help people to consolidate. Let's engage people with their pensions, and let's really find a way of helping people to get excited about the fact that they've got a significant asset here, which is potentially making a big difference to society as well as making a big difference to them. And then the final thing I think that we have to do is we have to think about how we help people turn their pension savings into a pension income. A pension for most people means an income in retirement. It's about replacing your wage with an income in retirement. And what you're going to get at the end of saving is a large pot of money, and you need to be helped to turn that into a sustainable income stream that will last you as long as you need it.
So pensions really is an interesting area, and delighted to be able to talk to you today, Helen, and to hear more about how Nest is growing and its influence and its plans for the year ahead. It's now time for Skittlemania.
And now, get your chopsticks ready. It's Skittlemania!
We put 30 Skittles in Cup A and given our guest a pair of chopsticks. Over 90 seconds, Helen will attempt to transfer as many Skittles from Cup A to Cup B, whilst answering some of the silliest questions the Smart Money People team can muster. Remember, the record to beat is held by Tanya Andreasen, an amazing 17 Skittles.
Oh my goodness.
Helen, are you ready to go?
Well, I'm as ready as I'll ever be, but I have to say this is extraordinarily difficult. Can I cheat?
Our time starts now. Are you intrigued to know what a deep-fried Mars bar tastes like?
Oh, no, I think it sounds disgusting. I would not enjoy a deep-fried Mars bar, although I do enjoy deep-fried things, not a Mars bar, no thank you.
Paris or Amsterdam?
Oh, Paris any day. It's the most beautiful city in the world.
Hey, we got a skittle.
Yay, I did it.
Is it okay to recline your seat on the plane?
If you're in business class, yes. If in economy, I think it's really rude because it impacts quite badly on the person behind you.
It does indeed. We're 30 seconds in. Would you rather live in a submarine or on a hot air balloon?
Oh, a hot air balloon. I like to be high.
Pineapple on a pizza, yay or nay?
Pineapple on a pizza, yes. Pineapple on a pizza sounds good.
Do you use chopsticks when eating at a Chinese restaurant?
Clearly not, since I've only managed to get two Skittles.
It's two Skittles. We've got 33 seconds left. What's your favourite colour Skittle?
Oh, the purple ones. I think they're the best.
Would you swap your home for an actual nest if it had a wonderful interior design?
No. I like my creature comforts too much.
That's no nest from Helen from Nest. do you have a favourite Helen from history?
Oh, goodness, that's
another
a good
skittle.
One. Helen. The obvious one to say would be Helen of Troy, wouldn't it? But I'm going to say Helen Keller.
Well, one activist. Last question, a couple more seconds left, Helen. What would you make as your main dish on your night on Come Dine With Me?
Mince and dumplings. I love mince and dumplings.
And that's all we've got time for.
Oh, that's pathetic. Three.
Helen Dean has three Skittles. Well, Helen, look, it's been delightful to have you on Money Bites. Thank you for coming on and talking to us about all things pensions. We look forward to hearing what happens next for Nest and potentially welcoming you back on Money Bites at some point in the future.
Thank you, and I'm sorry I'm so appalling at the Skittles test.
So that was three Skittles for Helen from Nest. Tune in next week to see if another contender can unseat our current leader, Tanya Andreasen of FinTech Futures, and become the latest Skittle sensation.
Good afternoon, thanks for calling customer care. How may we help?
Hello, is this the number for the Jammy Dodgers?
Yes, we're Burton's Biscuits. We make Jammy Dodgers.
Fantastic. Well, that's quite an odd inquiry, but what it is me and my wife, Meredith, we simply love Jammy Dodgers. We always have done, going back to our wedding day. We had a big Jammy Dodger cake on our wedding day.
Oh, amazing.
But the problem is, we not long ago relocated to the Scottish Highlands. And,
right.
There isn't a shop for Bleeding Miles. And so I was wondering, if I redirected my pension, it's a rather healthy pension, £500 a month, that's about our Jammy Dodger budget, and if I relocated that to Burton's Biscuits, would you be able to send us a van monthly?
Oh, I couldn't answer that question because I don't work in the sales team. I obviously work in the customer service team.
Yes.
I can, by all means, take down some notes and pass that over if that would help.
If it's easier, we're happy to buy one of the Jammy Dodger machines, one of the ones that make the Jammy Dodgers. If they've got the utensil that puts the heart in, Meredith loves the heart.
Let me have a look, see what I can do for you.
Thank you. So, bear with me, I just need to get a pen. Meredith!
No problem.
Meredith, can I have the pen? Yes, Jammy Dodgers. Yes, I'm doing it, Meredith. Yes, no, never mind the diabetes, Meredith. Yes, sorry, carry on, please.
That's okay, eat zero.
Oh, well, I heard... Tonight, Meredith is making her own Jammy Dodgers. She thinks she's Mary Berry, this woman, but...
I like the sound of that. I think there is a recipe on our website for that, if she would like to have a look.
Yeah, we'll look it up. Well, thank you so much. You've been so kind. Have just a lovely evening.
You're welcome, sir. You're very welcome. You take care and have a lovely rest of your evening.
Next up, producer Eddie spoke with personal finance blogger Lynn James, a.k.a. Mrs. Mummy Penny, to discuss how she's planning for her pension. Take it away, Eddie.
Can you take us through your background, what you do, and how you became Mrs. Mummy Penny?
Hi, thanks for having me on the podcast. So, yes, I'm Lynn James, and I am a personal finance blogger at Mrs. Mummy Penny. So I'm 42 now, and I've spent most of my career in the corporate world. So I trained as an accountant and spent a lot of those sort of corporate years helping out my friends as well with any money questions they had or savings they needed to make. Or there was a few friends that had debt problems that I would help them sort of come up with a solution. And I had one of those lightning bolt moments, and it literally was a moment of, oh my gosh, like all this information I've been sharing with my friends, I could turn it into a website and I could share it with the world.
And as you know, our topic for this week is when should you start thinking about your pension? What are your personal pension goals and how far along the way are you to achieving them?
That's a lot of the premise of my website, actually, where I talk about real life money and things that don't always go right. And there's a lot of things that do go right. But my pension is something that I've completely messed up, because you really should start it as early as possible in your 20s. But I remember clearly the feeling in my 20s before I had children, and I had a decent, I think I was working for Tesco's, I just qualified as an accountant, so I was on a good salary, but I just decided I couldn't afford that £100 a month out of my salary to put into my pension, so I just didn't do it. I've even tried to work out how much money I've lost out on, and it's horrible. It's six figures of money I've missed out on that it would be worth now. But anyway, hindsight, hey? So then I sort of got some sense after my second child was born and started putting money into a pension from the age of 32 up to the time I left EE, which was when I was 37. So I paid into a pension for 5 years of my working career. I don't mind talking about these numbers because it's all on my website anyway, but I've got £50,000 in my pension at the moment, which is worth hardly anything for when I actually retire. So I've not put enough money into my pension.
And do you have a figure in mind that you would be comfortable retiring with as your pension?
Yeah, because I've just done some research into this, actually, with a sort of financial planning company. So they've sort of plugged all my numbers of the things I have and how much I intend to put into my pension over the next few years till I retire. As long as I retire at the age of 65, and I'm aiming for a total asset pot of £500,000.
And as you, especially working freelance and having to contribute to your own pension, have you found yourself having to sacrifice any regular expenses, or are there any expenses you found that were actually quite easily expendable to maintain pension contributions?
It's so hard when you're self-employed, and there are certain things that you can't avoid. My salary to pay the household bills has to come out first. I have to set aside money for tax, and I also put money into like investments, so into stocks and shares, ISAs, and then sort of pension sort of falls as the sort of fourth option. When I did the sort of analysis of how much money I need for my retirement, I need to be putting in like at least £500 a month into my pension, and I haven't managed to put in £500 a month.
Can I just ask, like, your experiences with financial advisors or pension specialists, such as, I believe, did you have a relationship with Pension B of some sort?
Yeah, so pensions, what I've done is I've consolidated all of my old pensions from my employment with Pension B. And the main thinking around that was, so my pensions were sort of frozen with my previous employers. So the great thing about consolidating it with Pension B is I can now choose when to put money into my pension. So if I want to put in £50 this month and I want to put in £1,000 next month, they're completely flexible. I can do that and add to it. I just can't obviously take any money away from it. And I put it through as a company contribution from my limited company, so that saves me on business tax as well. And we sort of did some scenario analysis that if I wanted to retire when I was younger, how much extra that would mean I'd have to put in, and it was a bit too eye-watering to even consider. So
it's quite an interesting discussion about whether to live now or save for the future, and how much to kind of seize the moment versus being frivolous with what could potentially come down the road. How do you balance your desire to spend and live life in the moment, as it were, with your dedication to saving for the future? Do you think you've found like a healthy middle ground between those two things?
Yeah, that's a really good question. It's something I've commented on quite a bit, because I've got a very different sort of view of life. So my parents died when I was quite young, when I was a teenager. And they died without spending any of this money. It's given me a very different view of life, that life is for living, and you also have to sort of save money for the future. So I sort of try to balance it where I have nice experiences in my life. We go on nice holidays and experience good things, because I sort of think there has to be an element of enjoying the money, but also making sure that you have enough money set aside for the future as well.
How exactly would you put it to a younger Lynn to convince her that she should be making pension contributions earlier?
I think my biggest regret is the how much the money would have grown by now. And that's what I
when I sort of referred back to how much my pension would be worth now if I'd put that money in. So it was like, it was £100 a month that it was going to cost me of my take-home money to put into this pension. But what that £100 is worth in now, 20 years' time, 30 years' time, 40 years' time, it's so much more. So it's almost like, think of the time value of money and what that investment could be worth. If I'd put money into my pension from my very first pay packet, you know, my first job when I was 22 in HSBC Bank, if that had just happened from my very first salary, I just would have got used to it.
That's all for today, Lynn. Where can our listeners find you?
So you can find me on social media, on Instagram and Twitter. I'm Mrs. Mummy Penny UK.
And that's all we have time for on this week's Money Bites. Thanks to Helen Dean and Lynn James for joining us. Please do remember to review, subscribe, and why not visit us at Smart Money People. Goodbye.